The Fan on Demand. Dennis, anyone?
This is Milos Raonic, and you're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
And it is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Roger Lajoie. Tom Tebbit is at the U.S. Open in New York on the line, and we're with you for the next hour and our ninth show of the season. We'll be back with you again on September the 11th. Busy show coming up tonight. Tom's got a conversation with Martin Laurando, great Canadian tennis name, and he'll have his questions feature, as we saw last week and heard with Roger Federer. Well, Daniel Nestor and Andy Murray, how about that, in conversation with their own Tom Tebbit, coming up later in the program as well. Your last chance to qualify to win the Wilson tennis racket is also on the show. Tom will have his trivia, and we encourage emails because Tom loves your questions. So let's hear from you as well. You can email the show, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca. So email your questions for Tom during the show. We'll get to the mailbag at the end of the hour, at the top of the hour with Tom. And when we throw that email address out again later, keep it handy, because if you answer Tom's trivia, you'll get two entries into our draw, which will be held next week to announce who wins that Wilson racket. We've been doing that along with giving away Rogers Cup tickets throughout the course of the year. So lots of fun still to come on the program. Stick around once we have a very busy hour of tennis as Tom joins us from New York. But Tom is not as great a news as we were certainly hoping as far as the Canadians. Give us the update from today. Most people already know it was not a good day for Canada on the courts.
No, it wasn't. Eugenie Bouchard lost her match to Makarova. All along, quite frankly, talked to somebody reasonably close to the Bouchard camp today and said that, you know, I was a little bit worried that her first two matches had been sort of real, thrillers right down to the last couple of games, 6-4 in the third, both matches, and wondered how she'd pull up. I thought she played a great match, the first match against the Romanian. So, that was a really Serge Daya. And I thought she played terrific in another match, but I didn't think she played nearly as well in their last match against Zalavova Strishova, the Czech. And it looked like she won that match more because the Czech made the mistakes at the end. So I just sort of wondered how she'd be. And, you know, because she only had four matches during the summer, and she had had a hamstring problem going in, so she didn't have quite the training she wanted. So I thought she was vulnerable, and she played very poorly at the beginning of the match today. At times, she sort of got it back and played her usual tennis, but I think she paid for that start and gave Makarova a little bit of confidence, and that was all she needed to play very well and end up winning it, you know, two sets. The score was 7-6, 2 in the tiebreak, and then 6-4. And of course, Bouchard had a heat issue. And to be honest with you, she was supposed to be in for her press conference at 7 o'clock, and that was a good hour and a half after the match finished. But it's now been delayed till 7:30. So I have a feeling, unfortunately, that Eugenie is not feeling too well.
That is too bad, Tom. And you know, listen, the pressure of the genie has been put under here at a young age. Not to make excuses for her, she's had a phenomenal amount of success in the major tournaments, maybe not as great in the other tournaments as well. But there is now, some conjecture among some people that, you know, she had that aura of invincibility about her and how tough she was. And not to question that she isn't tough, but we saw it at the Rogers Cup. I guess the Rogers Cup and today we're seeing a little bit more of a human side of her. And maybe the expectations, you know, need to be tempered just a little bit for somebody who's 20 years old.
Well, I don't think the expectations should be tempered too much long term, but I think short term, you get to the Wimbledon final, you play as well as she did both in Paris and Wimbledon, you win your first tournament right before the French Open. There are a lot of expectations, and it was a huge deal in Montreal. I just think it was overwhelming for her, that result, even though it wasn't against a very good player or on paper a very good player. In some ways, it was predictable, just because you knew that it was going to be hard for her to handle all the emotion of that situation. And a little bit the same thing here. You know, she was on the front page of the New York Times magazine the weekend before the tournament started. Huge long article. I mean, she's the next big thing and all that sort of stuff. So, and then as I mentioned before about the injury thing going in, I think she was a little bit underdone. She wasn't quite as prepared as she could have been. There were times when she played like she has played, and she was very impressive. And, you know, full credit to her. She went down swinging today, but I think Makarova just got maybe a little bit of confidence because of the way Bouchard was not at her best. Excuse me. And Makarova played really well. I mean, I didn't realize the way she was quite that good. And I actually didn't even notice it before that she's quite that tall. Eugenie's 5'10". Makarova's actually 5'11". And her serve was very impressive today. It really helped her a lot. So, she lost to a good opponent. I mean, Makarova beat Serena a few 2 years ago at the Australian Open. She beat Kvitova in Montreal, the tournament there. So she's capable of these kind of matches. She's not that consistent some of the time, but she certainly was impressive today.
Well, she was. And as I said, it is tough competition for anyone. It is the U.S. Open and the majors. Sometimes you take it for granted when you make it to the semifinals all the time that you're going to do it all the time. Tom Tebbit is in New York at the U.S. Open. I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces. Questions for Tom are welcome. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. We'll read Tom's mailbag a little later. Coming up in just a few minutes, Davis Cup coach and a great Canadian tennis player in his own right, Martin Laurando, in conversation with Tom. And later, the one-on-one questions continue with Andy Murray and Daniel Nestor, and your chances to win the racket with Tom's trivia later in the show as well. Follow me on Twitter at TheRaj590 and follow Tom at Tom Tebbit, and love to get your feedback throughout the course of the show as we continue to talk about the U.S. Open. Tough on the doubles front as well, too, getting deep in it. You talk about the expectations. We also expect Canadians to go deep into doubles, too, don't we, Tom?
Well, Daniel Nestor lost yesterday, and I think part of that was he's not very good in hot, humid conditions, and they were really hot and humid yesterday. So he went down in two sets with his partner, Nenad Zimicic. A little bit of a surprise in terms of, you know, the ranking and that sort of thing, but Daniel, I know, just doesn't like those conditions, so it was kind of tough for him here yesterday. And then today, in a match that was played on the grandstand, we had Jack Sock and Vasek Pospisil, the eight seeds, go down to Carlos Berloque and Leonardo Mayer from Argentina, 6-2, 6-2. You would never think they'd lose that by that one side of the score. It was just playing a bad match, a real stinker for them. They didn't play well, but, you know, credit to Berloque and Mayer. They made their shots. They kept the pressure on them. They didn't fold when maybe there were some chances that Sock and Pospisil might get back into it. So they won that match, but it is a surprise that they're out. And Gabriela Dabrowski from Ottawa and her partner Brzozowska from Poland, they went down to an experienced team. Not too much of a surprise there, but we're looking for Milos to sort of redeem things. There's a young 15-year-old, Catherine Sebo from Woodbridge, Ontario. She won her singles match today, beating a seeded player. So that's one little sort of bright light in kind of a dark picture for the day.
Yeah, be kind of nice for sure. And again, it all depends on the expectation. Shows how far we've come as a Canadian tennis country when we're disappointed this deep into the U.S. Open. It is getting deep as Serena Williams advances to the quarterfinals. Maybe we'll take a minute or two on both the men's and the women's, what we've seen so far. Talk a little about Milos, and then we'll hear from Martin Laurando. But give us your assessment on the rest of the women's field so far. And clearly, it's Serena Williams' tournament to win.
Well, it definitely is. I think that the highest other seed in the tournament, aside from her at number one, is Caroline Wozniacki at number 10. So it just goes to show you that, I mean, everybody's disappeared from two to nine, including Eugenie Bouchard, obviously, at number seven. So it's a wide-open tournament that way. You think there is Victoria Azarenka is still around. Obviously, she's been in the final here twice and is a former Grand Slam champion twice at the Australian Open. So she's a quality player, but she will win. If she wins tonight, she plays Krunic, who's already beaten Kvitova and played well, beat Madison Keys as well. If she happens to pull off the upset, that'd be a surprise. But if Azarenka gets through, she would play Makarova in the quarterfinals, and it'll be Panetta against Serena Williams in the other quarterfinal. But Serena's certainly looking very good. And on the other side of the draw, it's Benchik maybe is a surprise there. Belinda Benchik, the 17-year-old from Switzerland. You never know really how good a young player is, so that'd be fun to watch her. And then you have Wozniacki, who pulled off the big upset yesterday, of course, beating Sharapova.
Good stuff indeed, and we will see how it all transpires with a couple of days still, of course, almost a full week still left here at the U.S. Open. Men's side in Milos now, Tom. Basically, from what you've seen so far, it's obviously a case of the top players in the world are still the top players in the world. But assess how Milos has played for us and how the rest of the tournament has gone, especially vis-a-vis the chances of Milos at least getting to the semis.
Well, I mean, I think it's close to a 50-50 match tonight, probably 55-45 for Milos. But Kei Nishikori is a fine player from Japan, very quick player, very capable of playing both defensive and offensive tennis. So I think it's a real challenge for Milos tonight. He beat him at Wimbledon, of course, but this is probably a little bit more favorable surface for Nishikori. So I think it's really going to be fun to see that match. Looking forward to it a lot. If he happens to get through that one, he probably will play Stan Wawrinka, I think, who's out there now in the quarterfinals, which is a winnable match, but it'll be a tough match. And then, of course, there's the big match everybody's looking forward to now on Wednesday night, which will be Djokovic against Murray. And that would be who Milos would play if he got as far as the semifinals. So there's some pretty good tennis players turned to beat in these last four rounds. I mean, obviously he's capable of it if he gets his very top game. But he's going to have to raise his level tonight from his last match. He didn't play that well against Estrella Burgos in the last round. But, I mean, I think he knew he was going to win that match. And maybe sometimes it's just hard to force yourself to be in fifth gear when you know you should probably say fifth gear for a guy like Djokovic, for a guy like Wawrinka, and maybe even for a guy like Nishikori.
Well, there's so many good players in the world, it's illustrated. And yeah, when you get to the top four, then it gets terrifically difficult for sure. He certainly does know how to win tiebreakers. I guess that's the best thing, eh? Get to the tiebreaker. That's easier said than done. But boy, his record is astounding.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it's in that 19-2 I calculated from the beginning of Wimbledon on. And it's, you know, part of it is how well he plays, and part of it is just how well he holds his serve, whether it's in the regular set or in a tiebreak. Other guys really get nervous. They just know they can't lose a point on serve. Puts a heck of a lot of pressure on them. It's a different pressure than almost anybody else they play, unless they're playing John Isner or Ivo Karlovic or something like that. And that's a huge thing working in Milos's advantage. And he actually said the other day, if I can, sometimes I just sort of think when I'm not playing well, just get to the tiebreak, and then, you know, thinks the odds are going to be on his side at that point.
Yeah, just getting to the tiebreak, easier said than done against some of the top players in the world, but it will be interesting for sure. Tom Tebbit is in New York covering the U.S. Open. I'm Roger Lajoie here in our Toronto studios, and this is Aces, our ninth show of the 10 we do throughout the tennis season. Thank you for your support of the show very much. Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada, and what a job they have done. Certainly Tennis Canada the last couple of years is which keeps Aces coming back and keeps the interest in tennis in this country still going up. Disappointing day for Canada today, but your questions for Tom are welcome, and we'll read Tom's mailbag a little later. You can reach him, Roger, at sportsnet590.ca. Already filling up with some questions. Always fun to hear your questions for Tom. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Drop us an email, and Tom will answer your questions later. And, of course, you'll have a chance on Tom's trivia a little later in the program to qualify for the Wilson tennis racket as well. Okay, Tom, tell us about Martin Laurando, of course, who I remember is a very fine player, but now, of course, a very important tennis person in this country.
Yeah, he is actually sort of an interesting story with Martin, because he went to Pepperdine as a walk-on and made himself into a sort of a player on that team. It was a very good team in Pepperdine tennis back in those days. And then I think he got to number 90 in the world in singles on the ATP, which for his ability, really, it was totally maxing on his talent. So he's a good guy to be the captain of the Davis Cup team, knows a lot about the sport from, you know, the college level all the way through the pros. And obviously Canada has a big Davis Cup tie coming up the 12th to the 14th of September in Halifax to remain in the world group for next year. So I talked to him today, actually, after Vasek Pospisil lost his doubles match. I asked him about all the Canadian players, how they did in the singles event here, and a little bit about the doubles as well, and about what's coming up in Halifax in, I guess, about 10 days from now.
All right, let's listen in to Tom's conversation with the Davis Cup captain, Martin Laurando.
Martin Laurando, welcome to Aces.
Thank you, Tom.
Let's have a look at the U.S. Open with the men so far. Start with Frank Dancevic. How did you think he did in his opening round match?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's been a while since we had three singles guys directly in Grand Slam, and you know, Frank had a tough loss there, 7-6 in the fifth. Same with Vasek, you know, in five sets. So we, you know, I mean, it's pretty good presence, but you know, a couple of heartbreak losses there in the last Grand Slam of the year. You know, I thought Frank's level was very good. It was a very good match all around. And I'm sure he'd like to take that first set tiebreaker back and then, you know, try to play a point or two differently. But overall, you know, it was a long match, 3.5 hours, and he held up good, and the level was very high. And, you know, it, like a lot of times in the final set tiebreak, you know, it's a couple of points. Either they go your way or they don't, and that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, that was against the 32 seed Yao Sousa from Portugal. Vasek Pospisil, same things. Simone Bolelli, a tough match in the first round, and obviously just a little while ago, lost in doubles as well.
Yeah, Vasek, you know, had you know, he had a tough one to swallow last year here, and this one too. I thought, you know, maybe on paper he was maybe the better hardcore player, but you know, I got to give it to Bolelli. He came out swinging. The forehand was hot that day. He was serving well, and you know, even his backhand that can maybe break down a little bit sometimes held up pretty good. So you know, a tough one for Vasek is that kind of match where, you know, if he can get past the first round, maybe past the second, and get a bit of momentum, you know, he can pick up some good steam because these conditions suit his game really well. When it's hot and the ball flies, it travels really fast, and his serve is very hard to return. And his forehand is even more deadly. So a bit unfortunate there for Vasek.
And a pretty big disappointment, 6-2, 6-2 in the doubles today to Berloc and Meyer.
Yeah, it is. You don't expect that score from a team that's been so hot. I think what there's 16-1, 17-1, something like that in the last couple of months. But eventually, you know, your run comes to an end, and you know it came pretty abruptly. Nobody expected that score, but you know I think the guys started off slow, and the other guys pretty much had everything to gain and to win going into this match. They were swinging freely, and you know it's nothing to worry about. You know they still had a very good summer, and they're playing very good doubles.
And finally, Milos Raonic going tonight against Kei Nishikori. I think a lot of people are interested in that match.
Yeah, I think, you know, probably interested because the matchup is very interesting. Big, giant guy against a smaller guy, and one that's quick and witty and covers a lot of distance, returns well, and Milos has, you know, like the big serve, the big forehand, the big game, so it's a bit of a heavyweight against a flyweight maybe. But it's a kind of match that Milos maybe was waiting a bit. You know, the first couple of rounds he was expected to win, and now he's going to have to pick up his game. And usually he does when he plays a very high opponent. So I'm expecting some fireworks tonight.
Let's move ahead to Davis Cup, the 12th to the 14th in Vancouver. It's the World Group playoff to remain in the 16 nation World Group, the elite group. Canada's taking on Colombia. Just in a broad perspective of things, how does that shape up for the Canadian team?
Well, it's shaping up well. You know, nobody's hurt. Everybody's is healthy, which is different than our last time around, our last tie in Japan. The guys have played, you know, a lot more tennis than in February, and they've. In the meantime, they've done a lot of things that they had never done before. You know, Milos going quarterfinals and French Open, semifinals at Wimbledon, raking up some more quarterfinals, semifinals at Masters Series, and winning another tournament. Vasek, you know, winning a Grand Slam. So a lot of things are kind of going their way, which should help with their confidence going into this tie. And you know, as far as the Colombians are concerned, it's a very tough team. We expect every single match to be very, very difficult. They got experienced players in Fala and Giraldo, and their doubles team is, in my opinion, maybe top six, top eight team in the world. So, again, that point is going to be very difficult to win. So, the good thing is that we're playing at home in front of a. Like in a big stadium, a big arena, tickets are going well, and you know I'm hoping that it turns out a little bit like Vancouver in our first tie last year against Spain. We hadn't been in Vancouver in about 20 years, and there was a lot of excitement and buzz, and the crowd really answered to the call. So it's been about 17-18 years since we last played Davis Cup in Halifax, and it's been a long time coming. And you know, our players are hot, and you know, tennis is really rising, ticket sales are going well. So I'm expecting the crowd to kind of be a little bit like Vancouver, you know, first time around, and hopefully, you know, that'll help us get through this tie.
What kind of scouting have you done? What have you heard about the Colombian team? They have Faya, is a very good player, been around for El Giraldo as well, and they have the young guy named Gonzalez, and then Farah and Cabal possibly in doubles. Do you know if they're all coming, and what do you think sort of will be the lineup for them when the actual tennis starts on the Friday?
Yeah, they're all coming. You know, it's a big moment for them. They're experienced. They have a lot of depth. Even their number three guy, Alejandro Gonzalez, can play some good tennis. I've seen him play here throughout the summer, and you know they're not unknown to us. You know, all our guys know them very well. But they do have experience, and they're looking to get to the World Group for the first time ever. So they're very excited, and they have a chance coming up. So everybody is gearing for Davis Cup on as far as I'm concerned for Team Colombia.
What about the actual conditions in the arena, the court surface, for example?
Well, it's the same as we use in Vancouver. It's the same court that is manufactured by a U.S. company that made that surface for a tournament that was well known, San Jose. So it's the same court. We put it in an arena. We melt the ice. We put it straight on concrete, which produces a pretty high bounce, but also very very pretty fast conditions. And we're playing that when we play on this court, with some pretty lively balls, and then you know we play to our weapons. We play according to good aggressive Canadian style tennis, and that's the way we like it.
How much of a role do you think doubles will play in this tie? And obviously, I assume you'll be going with Pospisil and Nestor if you can. And they have, if they just name doubles players, they name Farah and Cabal, who are an excellent team. So that could actually prove to be a pivotal point if for any reason Canada lost. Let's hope not any, but maybe one match on the opening day.
Yeah, we're all aware that the doubles is going to be a very tough point to win. It has been, in, you know, the three ties we had last year, we went five sets against Spain. We lost that one. We won 11-9 in the fifth against Italy. We won 13-11 in the fifth against Serbia. So, you know, it's been a while since we had a pretty straightforward win. And you know, I expect this match to be very, very difficult. So, you know, we're hoping that Daniel is going to continue to lead our team. And when it's time to play doubles, and Bashak has been really on fire playing doubles this year, so hopefully, you know, they put it together and come up with a good win.
This is a tricky kind of tie because the bad scenario is if you lose, you go back into the American zone and trips to probably South America, all kinds of places where it's not that much fun to play. If you win, you stay in the elite 16-nation world group, you get treated first class, you get to play all the very best players in the world. So it really is kind of a very important tie in the sense that you don't want to tumble down into the lower groups again when you've been on the top-notch level for the last couple of years.
Indeed, Tom. You know, we've been 3 years in the world group, and it's really not an option for us at this stage to go backwards. The guys are pretty excited, to remain where we think we belong. We do believe we belong in the world group and seated in the world group. The guys all aspire to make the finals or even win this competition. We had a good taste of it last year, and we want to recreate this thrill. And nobody's thinking of going down. We really are going to be ready to win this one.
You had unbelievable bad luck in the last time you played in Tokyo in February. Neither Milos Raonic or Vasily Pospisil could play. So must be hoping that obviously things turn around this time. Couldn't be any worse than it was the last time.
Yeah, it's very unusual what happened. I mean, even Frank got hurt during the weekend, so our top three players were out with some injuries, and that's the way sports goes. But, you know, like I said before, you know, the guys are healthy now, and they've been playing a lot of tennis. They've been playing good tennis, so it's completely different, approach that we go into. We're a lot more confident knowing that everybody's has been playing a lot, winning a lot, and everybody's healthy.
Well, Marte, on behalf of all our listeners, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks very much again to Martin Laurando in conversation with our own Tom Tebbit here on Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network as well. Fine guy, Tom. And, you know, a guy's been around the game for a lot of years, and you referred to the fact that, you know, he maximized, got the most out of his career. That's really what makes, you know, the best coaches and captains, when you think about it in any sport, is people you can emulate, because no one can question a guy like that's work ethic, and he's been there.
Yeah, well, I always like to tell a story. I was lucky enough to go with the team to Guayaquil, Ecuador, a few years ago. And Martin speaks Spanish, and it's a pretty scary place. They told us, don't go outside the club. Don't walk 10 or 15 yards outside the main entrance of the club because it's dangerous. But there he was one day. He was out in the city trying to buy, and he ended up buying a small fridge to put these ice vests that, you know, the players put around their necks. And he went out and got the little small fridge that they could plug in and keep their ice vest cold. So it's not always the glamour stuff that shows you what a guy's really like. It's the little things like that he did to make the team a little bit better.
How do you think the Davis Cup goes this year? That's always a difficult thing, I guess, to predict. And as you mentioned at the tail end of that, so much factors come into it is how healthy players are during the competition as well. Some of the stuff you can't control. And, you know, it's a very unique environment, isn't it?
Well, the one thing you can't control is the court surface and the conditions you're going to be playing in. So they're basically tailored to what Milos would like and what Vasek would like, and I guess Daniel a little bit too in the doubles. So that certainly favors us. The home cooking favors us. The home crowd favors us. So a lot of things are that way. But they have all solid players. So I think it's going to make for some pretty entertaining tennis. If Milos is healthy and playing his best tennis, it's hard to see him not winning his two matches. It's hard to see Vasek not at least winning one match. And the doubles is going to be tough. But, I mean, I would say, you know, we're Canada's definite favorite. But it's a competitive tie, and it should be really fun to watch.
That'll be coming up. And, of course, we'll have full coverage on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. This is Aces. I'm Roger Lajoie in our Toronto studios. Tom Tebbit is live in New York covering the U.S. Open. And later in the program, Tom will continue his conversations, his one-on-ones. This week, Andy Murray and Daniel Nestor asking the questions. Now, give us a tease, Tom. Were they as much fun as Roger Federer?
Daniel was fun, but the one I was most pleased with was the one with Andy Murray. Obviously, he won the match today. He's playing Novak Djokovic in the big match on Wednesday night, and I think people really get a kick out of Murray. Most of the tennis writers who are around him a lot, he has a bit of a stern image, but almost everybody likes him and respects him.
Well, that's coming up in just moments, so stick around for that. Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada. I'm Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit. Tom's mailbag later in the show as well. Reach the show anytime. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Roger@sportsnet590.ca. Drop us an email, your question for Tom, and we'll read the questions to Tom a little later in the program. You'll also have a chance to qualify to get your name in our draw to win a Wilson tennis racket as well. Tom will give you the details later in the show on that. So drop us a line. Follow us on Twitter as well, at TheRog590 and at Tom Tebbit. Aces continues in just a moment. You're listening to Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Roger Lajoie in our Toronto studios. Tom Tebbit is live in New York covering the U.S. Open, and he welcomes questions from you. You can reach the show anytime, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Drop an email, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Question for Tom. He'll answer him at the top of the hour before we leave you. We will also have a chance for you to win tickets, or draw tickets, I should say, to have your name included and win the Wilson tennis racket. That's our end of season prize, which will come up on our final show of the season. And that is Thursday, September the 11th with Tom and myself. So we'll check in on that a little later in the program. Again, the email is roger@sportsnet590.ca. Reach the show as well on Twitter at TheRog590. That's my handle, at TheRog590, or at Tom Tebbit for Tom. And we'll take your emails anytime and tweets. Love to hear from the audience. A little bit later in the program, Daniel Nestor and Andy Murray. In fact, let's get to those interviews right now, Tom. And we'll start with Daniel Nestor and set the stage for people not listening to our last show. These are kind of unique features where you're asking some of the top tennis players around the same questions.
Yeah, just a bunch of fun questions. It was during the Rogers Cup, obviously, and you know, things, they get asked the same old things: how are you doing this year, and what are your plans for next year, and what are you working on, and all that sort of stuff. So try to find a few things that are a little bit different, and here's what I went through with Daniel.
Here's Tom with Daniel Nestor.
Daniel Nestor, do you remember the first person you ever beat in tennis?
I remember the first person I lost to in the tournament, but I don't remember... I know I won my first match in a tournament, but then I lost the next one. But I don't remember the person I beat.
Where was that?
Mayfair West.
Right. What was the first racket you ever had, and what do you remember about it?
This last year, Wooden Challenge number 100 or...
One.
Number one? Yeah, that was it.
Good racket?
Well, I mean, this is racket I used in a tournament. My first ever racket was like a Kmart special. $2 racket.
If for one day you could play inside another player's body just to experience what it really is like to play the way that player plays, which player would you choose?
Well, someone who has very little physical strength, stamina, and all that, I'd like to do what Nadal does, because that would be a new feeling. I feel like, you know, when I watch Federer play, like, you know, I don't have his athleticism, but I feel like some of the shots I understand, you know, but Nadal, I don't understand getting behind the ball and... You know, hitting with that kind of pace.
And who was your favorite athlete growing up? Not necessarily a tennis player.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, for tennis, it was Connors. Hockey was like Guy Lafleur. Basketball was Dr. J. Football was, I don't know, someone on the Steelers. Lynn Swann, maybe? Or yeah, probably Lynn Swann.
And is there any sport you're not very good at, or either that you're very bad at?
Lots. Anything to do with, like, physical strength, like power sports, you know? Like, I'm good at sports with a ball, like hand-eye coordination, but, like, skiing, swimming, just something where you have need stamina and a lot of strength, and I'm terrible at that.
What do you like most or appreciate most about your parents?
Well, just dedicating their lives to, you know, helping me and, sacrificing and, you know, spending all that time, you know, driving me to tennis and whatever it was I was doing. And, you know, that's, you know, all part of being a parent is you devote your life to your child. And they were really good at that, obviously.
And you have a brother, Alex. What do you like and appreciate most about him?
Growing up, he was always, supportive, and I look at my eldest daughter picking on my youngest daughter, and he didn't do that. He wasn't rough with me, which is nice, and he was always protective and all that, because we were pretty far apart in age, 4 years, so, you know, but we played sports and all that, so it was nice to be able to also play with someone that was athletic and, had similar interests.
You obviously fly a lot, and the easiest thing to say about making flying easier is to fly business class. But do you have any other secrets to try to make flying sort of more manageable and comfortable?
The actual flying?
Or the whole procedure of just getting to the airport and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, like you said, it definitely helps having status. And, you know, when you travel a lot, you have more and more status with the airlines that you fly in. So you're able to get upgraded more for that reason, but... emergency exit if you're not something with more leg room and jet lag. I try and stay up as late as possible first few nights in a new city.
And last question is, Rod Laver back in the old days said beer was good for you. He liked the hops and the barley, was very healthy. Nowadays it seems like the players don't drink much beer. Do you drink beer, and do you think it's a terribly bad thing to have a beer now and then?
No, I don't think it's a bad thing. I like a beer when it's a hot summer day as a refresher, but I'm not one to drink more than one. It doesn't sit that well with me, so I'm not a big alcohol guy.
Daniel Nestor in conversation with Tom Tebbit. Boy, the beer days sure have gone to pass, haven't they, Tom?
Yes, I have. Listen, let's go right on to Andy Murray here. And actually, he had quite an interesting answer about the beer. So here's Andy Murray with answering the beer question and several other ones as well.
Andy Murray, welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you.
Do you remember the first person you ever beat in tennis?
I don't remember the first person I beat in tennis, but I remember the first matches I played. I played for the local club tennis team, and I was playing with like 45, 50-year-old men, and I didn't know how to keep the score, so they had to kind of explain to me as I was going along, but... they were the first competitive match that I played.
And do you remember your first racket and what was special about it?
I remember, I can't remember what make it was, but I remember that it wasn't graphite, because when I would hit it on the ground, it didn't break, but it would bend, so that, you know, like it wasn't sort of a perfect sort of circular shaped head after a few weeks of playing with it. Yeah.
If you could be inside another player's body and experience what it is like to play tennis inside that guy's body, one of the top players, for example, which player would you choose to have the experience of playing inside his body and playing like he plays?
Monfils. I mean, I would just love to know what it would be like to be able to move like that, to be honest. I mean, he's just an incredible athlete, extremely flexible, he can jump unbelievably high. And yeah, I just think it'd be fascinating to see what that would feel like.
And who was your favorite athlete when you were growing up?
Favorite athlete? I mean, in tennis, I loved Agassi and Hedman. And then outside of tennis, I followed Muhammad Ali a lot. Like, his career, I started when I got into boxing when I was like 12, 13 years old. I started to watch some movies on him and read some books and kind of found out a bit about what he did in his career, and he was pretty amazing.
Is there any sport you're really bad at?
Sport I'm really bad at? I'm not great at golf. I play probably off about 12 or 13 at golf. But I'm not terrible at golf. Sport I'm really bad at. I'm sure there's a few. I just probably haven't tried them. I really only play the sports that I can play to a reasonable level. I don't want to embarrass myself.
What do you appreciate most about your parents? What was the best thing your parents gave you?
I think the most important thing was that they allowed me and my brother to make our own choices, especially when we were starting to get to sort of 12, 13, 14 years old, in terms of like what sports we would play. And you know, there was there was a time like when my brother, you know, he just wasn't enjoying tennis, so you know, he was playing loads of golf. He played golf for a few months. He got down to like a 3 handicap at golf, and then kind of decided, actually, you know, I do enjoy playing tennis, so he started playing again. I had the same thing with football. There was periods where I didn't play tennis for a number of weeks, and you know, that they weren't sort of pushing us into tennis. They made sure that we were into sports, I think. I think both of them believed in that a lot, but we weren't pushed into doing anything. We just played the sports that we loved and enjoyed, and that was it for them. They just wanted us to be happy and enjoy playing.
This is a bit of a tricky one, but what do you like most about your brother, Jamie?
What do I like most about my brother? Yes. Well, yeah, that's a tough question. There's a lot of things, to be honest. He cares. He cares a lot for me. He always looks out for me. He'll always, you know, he would always defend me. You know, I mean, he obviously knows me very well. There's obviously been periods where I've had, you know, tough times, and he's always been behind me, especially the last few years of my career. He's always supported me, and that helps a lot.
The obvious answer to this question is flying first class, but is there anything you do to make flying easier for you, just generally?
I don't like flying, to be honest. I love traveling, but I don't like flying. Like, if you could skip that sort of getting in the aeroplane business, then it'd be nice. But anything I do, to be honest, I try to arrive as late as I can at the airports. That, you know, if I can spend like just, you know, 15, 20 minutes there before I have to board, then that for me is great. I hate waiting around the airports.
And I'm an old guy, so several decades ago I interviewed Rod Laver, and he said that a big good beer was good for you, the hops and the barley and all that stuff is good for you. And none of you guys nowadays drink any beer. What's the story with that?
Yeah, it's interesting that, because my brother, I was watching him play a match in a futures event, and my brother, he's still pretty thin now, but when he was younger, like 16, 17, he was very thin. And the parent, the father of one of the players that was playing there, he used to be a football manager. And, you know, I was talking to him, and I was saying, you know, like, yeah, Jamie needs to put some weight on and stuff. And he was saying that when he coached teams, if there was a player that wasn't big enough, they used to make them drink 2 pints of lager after each practice, basically to put the weight on. So times have changed a little bit now. We're more like into protein shakes and steaks and stuff to put weight on rather than beer.
Right. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks.
Those were the days, Tom. Couple of ales to get you going after practice. Yeah, things have changed for sure. That's Tom in conversation with both Daniel Nestor and Andy Murray. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network tonight. Aces is brought to you in part by National Bank. At National Bank, we know that you can't win without strong service. That's why we're proud to sponsor the Rogers Cup and Tennis in Canada. Visit nbctennis.ca. That's nbctennis.ca. All right, Tom, let's get to the mailbag. Got a couple of minutes here. And as usual, we've got several questions for you. Ed emails in and says, and wants to know what Tom thinks is the best stadium in all the sport to watch the match as a fan. He's only been to the Rogers Cup and the U.S. Open. And Tom, that was a great question, because we talked about the difference in the majors on last week's show. But in terms of the whole fan experience, maybe compare New York to the rest of them for us.
Well, that's an interesting one. I think I said before that the Susan Longland court in Paris is a fantastic court, because it's actually quite big, about 10,000, but the sides are really close to the court, and there's a really nice atmosphere in there. That's terrific. Actually, last night I was in the grandstand, and actually Vasek Pospisil played there today. Milos played there the other day. It's a terrific court here. Unfortunately, it's going to disappear in the expansion here. I think it's only got one or two more years left, so the grandstand here is great. the court 18 at Wimbledon is terrific. It's a court where Isner and Mahu played that marathon match. That's great. Australia, actually, the Rod Laver Arena is very nice because they don't have any private boxes or anything, just 15,000 seats, which are all pretty close to the court. So, you know, there are different ones, and obviously some of the smaller tournaments too. I mean, I think a lot of people in Toronto enjoy watching matches on the grandstand court at the back of the grounds, and same thing in Montreal with the Banque Nationale court right beside the main Uniprix Stadium court. So the smaller ones are actually the ones I think people remember in terms of that intimate contact, but obviously for the, you know, people want to see the big stars, so you need a big stadium.
Yeah, that's true, and that really does make a difference, and I know that firsthand from both Montreal and Toronto with the Rogers Cup. The smaller courts are the better ones, but you still, yeah, you had to have 15,000 fans watching. It's got to be a little bit big for sure. Kevin emails in at roger@sportsnet590.ca and says, Tom, do you have any different view of Jeannie Bouchard after today's loss and the Rogers Cup as a result of the performances? And is it just a matter of expectations with Jeannie? Should we expect this as part of her development?
Well, she just said in her press conference that she felt kind of lightheaded and dizzy, had a little bit of trouble sort of seeing and stuff. And so I haven't changed at all. She's going to be a terrific player. I think it was just maybe the problems with the summer, not having too many matches and not being able to really be in the proper physical condition. She more or less said that was one of the problems, that she didn't really prepare the term as well as she would like to have, and probably paid the price for that today and not being as fit as she could have been.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Ryan emails in. Milos Raonic certainly is, Tom, one of the best players I've ever seen in terms of his serve and his ability to control a match with it. But is his overrounding game still lacking a little bit? And maybe that's what's stopping him from taking the next step in the majors.
Well, I mean, he's never going to be Roger Federer. We know that. He's never going to be Grigor Dimitrov. So what he has to do is maximize what he has. And what he has is a fantastic serve. He has an absolutely, you know, dynamite forehand. That inside-out forehand across court is it's just a heck of a shot. So he has to use those shots. He has to try to get into the net with those big shots, sometimes put away shots at the net, and basically work on his movement. And if he just keeps... He said the other day, which I thought was very perceptive, he just said, I got to get better. And everybody wants to think there's one thing, and boom, you improve that, and you're going to be great. No, you just have to improve everything a little bit, and I think that'll really help move up a bit more.
Time for one more. Patrick says, how do you beat players like John Isner and Milos, because it seems like it's impossible to break their service? Same kind of question in terms of how do you compete if you're a player against someone with that boom and serve, Tom?
Well, I mean, I think they have other deficiencies. They don't move as well. Maybe they don't have their backhands aren't as good. So the main thing is Federer's shown what he does against Milos is get the ball back and play as much as you can on the serve. Hopefully you get a service break, and then you're in the advantage because you're probably going to hold your serves and you're going to have more success in the rallies because you can get that to that weaker side. But if you don't get to Milos' weaker side and let him hit that forehand, he's just about as good as anybody in the rally.
All right, that's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. That email address, keep it handy, roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Use it right now because Tom's going to give you a question, and you'll get two entries into our Wilson Racket Draw, which will be held in our next and final show on Aces this season, September the 11th. Congratulations, by the way, to Constantine Petiris. Constantine, congratulations. You get two entries into the draw because you knew the answer to last week's trivia question. And I guess by winning this week, you'll have a 1 in 12 chance at this week's trivia. So, Tom, the question, please.
It's a real toughie, Roger. What color were Eugenie Bouchard's shoes today?
Oh, are you kidding? What color were Eugenie Bouchard's shoes today? If you watch the mats, you know that one pretty easily because they are kind of distinctive. It's roger@sportsnet590.ca, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Give us the answer. You'll get two entries if we pick your name into the Wilson racket. Tell us about that racket, Tom, before we go.
It's a Wilson Steam racket, and I know if it's 100% guaranteed to raise the level of your game, improve your game, but I say about 95%.
That's a pretty good average for sure. Roger@sportsnet590.ca if you know the answer. Drop us an email right away, roger@sportsnet590.ca. We'll announce the winner next week. Tom, enjoy the rest of the U.S. Open. We'll be chatting again soon, my friend.
Okay, Roger.
That's Tom Tebbit at the U.S. Open. I'm Roger Lajoie. Thanks to our technical director, Derek Brandeo, our producer, Frank Head, and to our guest, Daniel Nestor, Andy Murray, and Martin Larondo. And again, our email, roger@sportsnet590.ca. You know the color of Jeannie's shoes. You have a chance to win that great Wilson tennis racket, which we'll announce next week. Ace is brought to you again by Tennis Canada, leading the growth of tennis in Canada, and National Bank. Visit them at nbctennis.ca. I'm Roger Lajoie for Tom Tebbit. Thanks for listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.